Mon bon Dieu, t'es qu'à mon Ami Amitafa, Amitafa, somme à nos mots tenir, Satou, Satou, Satou. That has concluded another session of formal meditation. May the clarity, the peace, tranquility that you have gained in that sitting be what liberates, moves you closer to self-mastery, liberation from suffering, and nearness to awakening. So, today is our last day at the retreat. And I'm still very grateful to be in you guys' presence. I really am. And I think it's been very, very healing for myself and successful for my, for my own training. And I'm very happy. I was very, I anticipated coming back to America for such a long time. I felt I had this cloud over my head saying that I wouldn't be able to sustain myself here with this new lifestyle as a being a monk. I always had this clamor in the back of my mind say, oh, nobody would care to hear about your story. So maybe there was some unpacking of that childhood trauma right there. I didn't have that, confidence to believe that I could, hold an audience that would be interested about some of these stories. Even though there's so many of them, some are Dharma stories and some of them are just strange stories that I've learned being a global backpacker. Some of the stories that I did learn that I thought were really interesting and eye-opening is how to perceive, accept, and perceive, accept, and recognize wisdom. Not recognize a clothing style, not recognizing a title, but perceiving the wisdom of the sages and saints that have walked this earth and continue to walk this earth until the last of our days. Those wise sages never really held close to a title more than they held close to the truth of what the truth really is, the ultimate plain truth. Some may call them bodhisattva, some may call them arahants, but the case is, I remember when I was in the forest monasteries, I'd hear some of the clamor amongst some of the new monks, some Western monks, new monks, and they couldn't make the parallel between a backpacker that's been traveling the world for years, experiencing different countries, not just as a backpacker touring through, but living in different countries, receiving wisdom from different cultures, and why they thought that they were better because they were monks and they've went one time traveling from town to town by foot. And they used to really think that they were so superior because of a title and a color of cloth. And I used to observe that. A lot of these travelers that you do see, even though they have different lifestyle, they maybe even have some different set of values, but their truths are very true, and you can perceive a lot of wisdom from the things that they have learned and they witnessed and seen. That is very true. Today's parable, which I call splitting rocks with water, is about wanting things to stay in your life that are destined to go. You be in that monastery and you meet people and you want them to stay with you. Practitioners come to the monastery, you want them to stay with you. Me previously being married and having to deal with separation was very difficult. I was young, you know, it was like my early 30s. And having to split from my family, split from my wife at the time, ooh, that was tough. I understand the wisdom now. And it helped me grow. But at that time, oh man. And I used to think about that in the monastery, and I came up with this poem, parable. Would you like to hear it? Would you guys like to hear it? All right, let's talk about it. One day, the rocks in the river had a dispute. They were fond of each other, but their views couldn't compute. The rock said to the river, "Hey, why, young river, must you always go? Is that the nature of the river to freely flow? Going here and going there, you'll never be stable if you can't sit and take care. This foolish behavior will end in despair. Do you not fear that our friendship will end or possibly tear? With time, build strength, stable and strong. I've been here for some time, maybe even too long. I will build us an oasis where we can stay, where we will be together till the end of our days." Now the river replied to the firm, hardened rock, "If you make a place, I will come to stay, but I warn you, things might not always go your way. The rock grabbed the earth, quickly forming a place, damming the river from all four corners of space. The river sat nice, and they enjoyed their bond. But after some time, the river turned into a pond. The rocks turned smooth, soft to the touch. The river grew stagnant, but worried a bit too much. To that the stone asked, "Are you not happy of the place that I've built? Are you sure there's a time where your waters will be spilt, exhausting my efforts and all that I've willed?" The river said softly, "Oh, I told you before, there comes a time to choose between one of the two doors, what you love or what is better. Have you not noticed there's a change in the weather?" The stone became saddened by what the river said, so stricken with grief that dark clouds formed right over the top of its head. The rain poured down and the pond started to rise. The rock knew its ideas with the river would collide. The tide swelled high and spilled over the top. The dam wasn't strong enough for the water to stop. The nature of the river was only to flow, making new places to puddle, new places to go. While the rock was more stable, its nature was to hold. If it rolled to a place, it sat until it was old. The more the stones worried, the heavier it poured. The pond turned back into what the rock had abhorred. The river again flowed, never stopping to look back, not turning to see all the stones had cracked. Everything over like a night in a dream. Pink lotuses drifting, taken far downstream. The river is sad but restless, you see. It never really could stay in one place to be. The rocks were strong, but their hearts were very hurt. The river turned its feeling to wet sand and dirt. The rocks were attached to traumas of the past, stopping it from moving to any place real fast. The rock learned a lesson on that very day. Never build a home for a person that has no intention to stay. Believe not a word that is uttered or said, but watch the movement of the river is more clever instead. And this is a parable about discernment, believing denial instead of the truth, impermanence, being aware of change instead of being taken away by them. And that is the parable that we will talk about that will start the Dharma lecture. What'd you think? It's okay? All right? Thank you. Well, the first thing we spoke about earlier that coincides with this parable is wanting things to be aversion, wanting things to be the way they are not, or not accepting things how they truly are. That anticipation, that what is that word? Now I forgot my English. A person's attributes, which you want them to be, their what is that word? I can't remember the word in English. I'm forgetting all of my language without clashing at once. I'll continue. I'll remember it 10, 15 minutes. Being attracted to somebody's potential, being attracted to a job's potential, being attracted to a place's potential. And it's really confusing for a lot of us. We do it all the time. Properties, relationships, jobs. So this parable is definitely looking into this type of ideas that we have. The river again flowed, never stopping, looking back, not to notice that the rivers had cracked. It wasn't in there to stay with you for the whole time. It was just in there for the ride, to get off and go do what it was supposed to do. The river knew its responsibilities. The rock didn't. Rock was lonely. The rock wanted somebody to hang out with. The rock wanted somebody to be with them for long. But what happened? The river became stagnant. No life grew there anymore. It started to be the death of the river itself. The echoes of the Buddhist truth that all things are always in motion. The rock itself even forgot that it fell from a high mountain. The rock itself forgot even how it got there. It's been there so long, it was stagnant. Doesn't mean that it didn't have feeling. It didn't mean that it couldn't understand things of the natures of the heart. It just remembers that if you stay in a place for long, nothing grows, nothing happens. In the Dhammapada, it says that all compounded things are impermanent. All compounded things are impermanent. When one sees this with wisdom, one turns away from suffering. We have denial versus truth, where Maya versus Satya. Satya means the truth as which it is, S-A-C-C-A. But it's pronounced Satya, Arya Satya. Arya Satya means to have the right view or the right truth. The rock was attached to traumas of the past. The rock denies the river's nature, projecting a fantasy of forever. Just like in relationships, people, places, sometimes you fall in love with the potential, not the reality. The truth is flowing right in front of us, but we choose the fantasy because it feels so much better. The fantasy is so much softer. The fantasy is helping you with your delusion. It's bringing your delusion to light. This fantasy, because it fits our script better. It fits our narrative. The rock believed in what the river said. The rock believed in what the river said, not what the river did. Yeah, I'll stay with you for some time. Okay, great, that's enough. But it didn't use saitya, which is the truth. It didn't use its discernment to see that wasn't the nature of the river in the first place. That was not what the river was supposed to be doing. You stopped the river. And you wanted it to conform to be like you. You set yourself up for failure. Upadana means, in Pali language, attachment or a grasping. Upadana. And this upadana, never build a home for a person that has no intention to stay. A lot of us make that mistake. I make that mistake. Where's your real home? Does it mean your home that you live in? Your real home is here, inside your heart and mind. That's your real home. You open your doors to everybody and let them come inside. Sometimes they come inside, they don't know how to leave. You know what it's like. You ever have a little homecoming party and somebody has a little too much? You finally get them outside the house, and then you see them in the backyard. Yeah. How did you get in the backyard? That's the same thing if we don't use discernment and discretion with our own minds and the companions we seek. Never build a home for a person that has no intention to stay. Is sometimes you open your heart and your mind to something, person, place, or thing. It doesn't always have to be a person. It can be one of the three nouns. And they never want to leave. And they'll fight you to get it out. The rock's attempt to dam the river is clinging in action. That is clinging. That's clinging in action. It's the same way we build internal fortresses for people who don't belong inside them. You've imprisoned them. So there's no way for them except to rebel. There's no way for them except, there's no way for this situation to rebel inside your heart and mind. So now you're hurting two people, yourself and the situation. You're making it uncomfortable. You're making it really awkward. The line is a teaching and warning. It could echo the Buddha's teaching on the fire sermon when he said, all is burning. The fire is craving, hatred, and delusion. Lobha, dosa, and moha. Hate, anger, greed, and delusion. We take a better look at this poem. Is that we understand that our development in the practice is like the river. It's constantly in motion. But it's constantly, the practice, the development of the practice is constantly, if it's used right, it's constantly flowing and always cleaning itself of debris. The practice isn't supposed to be stagnant. It's always cleaning and flowing and smoothening the hard, jagged rocks that we have in our mind, meaning our thoughts, or the corrosive, hard hearts that we have. The practice is supposed to flow through and clean it all out. So, with With that being said, with that poem, it reminds me of a time I was so desirous for things to go my way that I tried to set up parameters. I tried to set up parameters of things, try to control things that are out of my control, and it backfired and it hurt worse. It made me think a lot about how to apply the practice. I was married before I was a monk. We had split up because we had passport problems. She wasn't from America. She had problems with her passport. So she had to go back to her country. She got deported by the government. Passport problems. And when she got deported, I was stuck. Like, what do I do with my life? I just work for my wife, you know. I don't know what to do after that. But it really sharpened, you know, after that whole experience, it really sharpened my behavior and my attitudes. Because I tried so hard, and there was really nothing I could do. That river was flowing, and there was nothing I could do. There was no type of protection I could do. I couldn't do anything. But it did make me a lot wiser and learn how to use better judgment and assess things according to what they are, not how I wanted them to be or how I emotionally responded to things that I liked or disliked. So later on in the monastery, thinking about the situation, that is how I came up with that Dharma lesson. You have to let things be the way that they are. If not, you're going to suffer. And they rebel against you. Look at the rock of the river set itself. It grew to such a size, it burst to the dams and went over the sides, busting the rocks open. The rocks are pretty much symbolic of your heart. Not just the heart you have here, but the many hearts that you carry. We carry a lot of hearts. Some of us, we carry them on our sleeves. But following the Dharma, you protect your heart. The Eightfold Path is how you protect your heart. Realizing the Four Noble Truths is how you protect your heart. Your Dharma heart. That's the main heart that you should be protecting, is that Dharma heart of yours. Because you know, you if you hurt or harm your Dharma heart, you don't know if it's going to come back. That's your lifeline right there. And there's nobody to blame. What, 2:30? Was it?
2:30.
Okay. Okay, just checking. You guys all right over there? Everybody doing okay? Okay. Here's another. No. In the monastery, within the practice, there's a lot of stress about obeying the master. It's not a bad thing. It really isn't. Especially for us that are Westerners, that are coming into a new culture, a new identity, it's easier for you. It's not that you have to obey the master. It's because he's trying to make your lifestyle easier for you in an environment that is completely new. Following the master means following what he does in order for you to stay blameless amongst people that don't really understand you as being the outsider. And it also raises another question. If everyone's just following the master, how are they developing wisdom if you're just being a follower, not a questioner? But not an intrusive questioner. We're talking about a questioner that has sincerity, not just questioning the masters, the elders, the senior ranking monks or nuns. So the thing about this one here is a parable also about a young boy and his father. A young boy and his father were walking one day, and the young boy was very confused about a situation in question that was inside of his heart and mind. So he reached out to his father, pulled his hand, and said, "Father, can you tell me the difference between these two? What is knowledge and what is wisdom? What is the difference between knowledge and wisdom? How do I tell them apart?" The father, with wisdom beyond the boy's years, put his arm around the shoulders of the young boy and said, "You know, knowledge is observing a man who is very successful, rich and wealthy in his life, taking all the details, notes about everything he has done, where he went to school, who he talks to, his business plans, his achievements, and his success, how he has taken the steps that he has to be who he is today, all the small details of his life. But the difference between wisdom is, knowledge and wisdom is knowing that no matter how much you observe another man's path, it will never take away from the footstep that you need to take on your own to be successful. That is the difference between knowledge and wisdom. You can watch people until they're blue in the face, but if you're not applying the lesson and walking your own path, you're never going to gain the wisdom that you're going to need to be your own boss, to be your own person. So this is kind of what happens in a monastery between the monks that are there for a short time and who are there for a long time. The ones that have been there long enough in the monastery, they start having to flap their wings and make their own way forward. You can't live underneath the master your whole entire life. That doesn't develop wisdom. It doesn't. You're just following. How do you know if the Dharma is true if you're never applying it? You're just coasting on the coattails of another person. You're just riding on the stories of the master. It doesn't really work like that. The Dharma tells you need to apply the wisdom. What is the purpose of us going on backpacks and packing our stuff and walking from town to town to town? It's supposed to develop on you how to apply the Dharma in difficult situations. It's not about following the master. It's about learning, applying the skills that you learned and see if they're applicable in the real world. So, I'm going to open the floor for questions and answers at the moment. And hopefully, we'll be able to solve some of the problems in our minds. And I hope I'm not boring you. And thank you again for listening to some of those the parables and fables. Thank you.